You were offering him a precious treasure. Jace reached out and took it from her without a word. It was heavy, and the metal was cold against his skin. "Thank you," he said. It was the best he could do. He hesitated and then said, "There is one thing, something I've been wondering."
"Yes?"
"If Stephen was my father, then the Inquisitor, Imogen, was my grandmother."
"She was."
Amatis paused.
"A very difficult woman.
But yes, she was your grandmother."
"She saved my life," said Jace. "I mean, for a long time she acted like she hated my guts. But then she saw this."
He drew the collar of his shirt aside, showing Amatis the white star-shaped scar on his shoulder.
"And she saved my life. But what could my scar possibly mean to her?"
Amatis's eyes had gone wide.
"You don't remember getting that scar, do you?"
Jace shook his head.
"Valentine told me it was an injury from when I was too young to remember. But now, I don't think I believe him."
"It's not a scar, it's a birthmark. There's an old family legend about it, that one of the first Herondales to become a shadow hunter was visited by an angel in a dream. The angel touched him on the shoulder, and when he woke up, he had a mark like that. And all his descendants have it as well."
She shrugged.
"I don't know if the story is true, but all the Herondales have the mark. Your father had one too, here."
She touched her right upper arm.
"They say it means you've had contact with an angel, that you're blessed in some way. Imogen must have seen the mark and guessed who you really were."
Jace stared at Amatis, but he wasn't seeing her. He was seeing that night on the ship, the wet, black deck and the Inquisitor dying at his feet.
"She said something to me," he said.
"While she was dying, she said, 'Your father would be proud of you.' I thought she was being cruel. I thought she meant Valentine."
Amatis shook her head.
"She meant Stephen," she said softly. "And she was right. He would have been."
Clary pushed open Amatis's front door and stepped inside, thinking how quickly the house had become familiar to her. She no longer had to strain to remember the way to the front door, or the way the knob stuck slightly as she pushed it open. The glint of sunlight off the canal was familiar, as was the view of Alicante through the window. She could almost imagine living here, almost imagine what it would be like if Idris were home. She wondered what she'd start missing first, Chinese takeout, movies, Midtown Comics. She was about to head for the stairs when she heard her mother's voice from the living room, sharp and slightly agitated. But what could Jocelyn have to be upset about? Everything was fine now, wasn't it? Without thinking, Clary dropped back against the wall near the living room door and listened.
"What do you mean you're staying?" Jocelyn was saying. "You mean you're not coming back to New York at all?"
"I've been asked to remain in Alicante and represent the werewolves on the council," Luke said. "I told them I'd let them know tonight."
"Couldn't someone else do that? One of the pack leaders here in Idris?"
"I'm the only pack leader who was once a shadow hunter. That's why they want me," he sighed. "I started all this, Jocelyn. I should stay here and see it out."
There was a short silence. "If that's how you feel, then of course you should stay," Jocelyn said at last, but her voice didn't sound sure.
"I'll have to sell the bookstore, get my affairs in order."
Luke sounded gruff.
"It's not like I'll be moving right away."
"I can take care of that,
after everything you've done."
Jocelyn didn't seem to have the energy to maintain her bright tone. Her voice trailed off into silence, a silence that stretched out so long that Clary thought about clearing her throat and walking into the living room to let them know she was there. A moment later, she was glad she hadn't.
"Look," Luke said, "I've wanted to tell you this for a long time, but I didn't. I knew it would never matter, even if I did say it, because of what I am. You never wanted that to be part of Clary's life. But she knows now, so I guess it doesn't make a difference. And I might as well tell you. I love you, Jocelyn. I have for 20 years.
He paused. Clary strained to hear her mother's response, but Jocelyn was silent. At last, Luke spoke again, his voice heavy.
"I have to get back to the council and tell them I'll stay. We don't ever have to talk about this again. I just feel better having said it after all this time."
Clary pressed herself back against the wall as Luke, his head down, stalked out of the living room. He brushed by her without seeming to see her at all and yanked the front door open.
He stood there for a moment, staring blindly out at the sunshine bouncing off the water of the canal. Then he was gone, the door slamming shut behind him. Clary stood where she was, her back against the wall. She felt terribly sad for Luke, and terribly sad for her mother, too. It looked like Jocelyn really didn't love Luke, and maybe never could. It was just like it had been for her and Simon, except she didn't see any way that Luke and her mother could fix things. Not if he was going to stay here in Idris. Tears stung her eyes. She was about to turn and go into the living room when she heard the sound of the kitchen door opening and another voice. This one sounded tired and a little resigned. Amatis. "Sorry, I overheard that, but I'm glad he's staying," Luke's sister said. "Not just because he'll be near me, but because it gives him a chance to get over you." Jocelyn sounded defensive. "Amatis." "It's been a long time, Jocelyn," Amatis said. "If you don't love him, you ought to let him go." Jocelyn was silent. Clary wished she could see her mother's expression. Did she look sad? Angry? Resigned? Amatis gave a little gasp. "Unless you do love him."
"Amatis, I can't."
"You do! You do!" There was a sharp sound as if Amatis had clapped her hands together. "I knew it! I always knew it!" "It doesn't matter." Jocelyn sounded tired. "It wouldn't be fair to Luke."
"I don't want to hear it."
There was a rustling noise, and Jocelyn made a sound of protest. Clary wondered if Amatis had actually grabbed hold of her mother.
"If you love him, you go right now and tell him. Right now, before he goes to the council."
"But they want him to be their council member, and he wants to..."
"All Lucian wants," said Amatis firmly, "is you. You and Clary. That's all he ever wanted. Now go."
Before Clary had a chance to move, Jocelyn dashed out into the hall. She headed toward the door and saw Clary flattened against the wall. Halting, she opened her mouth in surprise.
"Clary!"
She sounded as if she were trying to make her voice bright and cheerful and failing miserably.
"I didn't realize you were here."
Clary stepped away from the wall, grabbed hold of the doorknob, and threw the door wide open. Bright sunlight poured into the hall. Jocelyn stood blinking in the harsh illumination, her eyes on her daughter.
"If you don't go after Luke," Clary said, enunciating very clearly, "I, personally, will kill you."
For a moment, Jocelyn looked astonished. Then she smiled. "Well," she said, "if you put it like that." A moment later, she was out of the house, hurrying down the canal path toward the Accords Hall. Clary shut the door behind her and leaned against it. Amatis, emerging from the living room, darted past her to lean on the windowsill, glancing anxiously out through the pane.
"Do you think she'll catch him before he gets to the hall?"
"My mom spent her whole life chasing me around," Clary said. "She moves fast." Amatis glanced toward her and smiled.
"Oh, that reminds me," she said. "Jay stopped by to see you. I think he's hoping to see you at the celebration tonight."
"Is he?" Clary said thoughtfully.
"Might as well ask. Nothing ventured, nothing gained."
"Amatis," she said, and Luke's sister turned away from the window, looking at her curiously.
"Yes?"
"That silver dress of yours in the trunk," said Clary. "Can I borrow it?"
The streets were already beginning to fill with people as Clary walked back through the city toward the Lightwoods house.
It was twilight, and the lights were beginning to go on, filling the air with a pale glow. Bunches of familiar-looking white flowers hung from baskets on the walls, filling the air with their spicy smells. Dark gold fire runes burned on the doors of the house as she passed. The runes spoke of victory and rejoicing. There were shadow hunters out in the streets. None were wearing gear. They were in a variety of finery, from the modern to what bordered on historical costumery. It was an unusually warm night, so few people were wearing coats, but there were plenty of women in what looked to Clary like ball gowns, their full skirts sweeping the streets. A slim, dark figure cut across the road ahead of her as she turned onto the Lightwood Street, and she saw that it was Raphael, hand in hand with a tall, dark-haired woman in a red cocktail dress. He glanced over his shoulder and smiled at Clary, a smile that sent a little shiver over her, and she thought that it was true, that there really was something alien about Downworlders sometimes, something alien and frightening. Perhaps it was just that everything that was frightening wasn't necessarily also bad.
Although, she had her doubts about Raphael.
The front door of the Lightwoods house was open, and several of the family were already standing out on the pavement. Mavis and Robert Lightwood were there, chatting with two other adults. When they turned, Clary saw with slight surprise that it was the Penhallows, Aline's parents. Mavis smiled at her past them. She was elegant in a dark blue silk suit, her hair tied back from her severe face with a thick silver band. She looked like Isabel, so much so that Clary wanted to reach out and put a hand on her shoulder. Mayra still seemed so sad, even as she smiled, and Clary thought, she's remembering Max, just like Isabel was, and thinking how much he would have liked all this.
Clary?
Isabel bounded down the front steps, her dark hair flying behind her. She was wearing neither of the outfits she'd showed to Clary earlier, but an incredible gold satin dress that hugged her body like the closed petals of a flower. Her shoes were spiked sandals, and Clary remembered what Isabel had once said about how she liked her heels, and laughed to herself.
You look fantastic.
Thanks. Clary tugged a little self-consciously at the diaphanous material of the silver dress. It was probably the girliest thing she'd ever worn. It left her shoulders uncovered, and every time she felt the ends of her hair tickle the bare skin there, she had to quell the urge to hunt for a cardigan or hoodie to wrap herself in.
You too.
Isabel bent over to whisper in her ear.
Jace isn't here.
Clary pulled back.
Then where?
Alex says he might be at the square, where the fireworks are going to be.
I'm sorry, I have no idea what's up with him.
Clary shrugged, trying to hide her disappointment.
It's okay.
Alec and Aline tumbled out of the house after Isabel, Aline in a bright red dress that made her hair look shockingly black. Alec had dressed like he usually did, in a sweater and dark pants, though Clary had to admit that at least the sweater didn't appear to have any visible holes in it. He smiled at Clary, and she thought, with surprise, that actually he did look different. Lighter somehow, as if a weight were off his shoulders.
I've never been to a celebration that had downworlders at it before, said Aline, looking nervously down the street, where a fairy girl whose long hair was braided with flowers.
No, Clary thought. Her hair was flowers, connected by delicate green tendrils, was plucking some of the white blossoms out of a hanging basket, looking at them thoughtfully and eating them.
You'll love it, Isabel said. They know how to party.
She waved goodbye to her parents, and they set off toward the plaza. Clary, still fighting the urge to cover the top half of her body, was crossing her arms over her chest. The dress swirled out around her feet like smoke curling on the wind. She thought of the smoke that had risen over Alicante earlier that day, and shivered.
Hey! Isabel said, and Clary looked up to see Simon and Maya coming toward them up the street.
She hadn't seen Simon for most of the day. He'd gone to the hall to observe the preliminary council meeting because, he said, he was curious who they'd choose to hold the vampire's council seat. Clary couldn't imagine Maya wearing anything as girly as a dress. And indeed, she was clad in low-slung camo pants and a black t-shirt that said, Choose Your Weapon, and had a design of dice under the words. It was a gamer tee, Clary thought, wondering if Maya was really a gamer or was wearing the t-shirt to impress Simon. If so, it was a good choice.
You heading back down to Angel Square?
Maya and Simon acknowledged that they were, and they headed toward the hall together in a companionable group. Simon dropped back to fall into step beside Clary, and they walked together in silence. It was good just to be close to Simon again. He had been the first person she'd wanted to see once she was back in Alicante. She'd hugged him very tightly, glad he was alive, and touched the mark on his forehead.
Did it save you?
She asked, desperate to hear that she hadn't done what she had to him for no reason.
It saved me, was all he said in reply.
I wish I could take it off you, she said. I wish I knew what might happen to you because of it. He'd taken hold of her wrist and drawn her hand gently back down to her side.
We'll wait, he said, and we'll see.
She'd been watching him closely, but she had to admit that the mark didn't seem to be affecting him in any visible way. He seemed just as he always had, just like Simon. Only he'd taken to brushing his hair slightly differently to cover the mark. If you didn't already know it was there, you'd never guess. How was the meeting? Clary asked him now, giving him a once-over to see if he'd dressed up for the celebration. He hadn't, but she hardly blamed him. The jeans and t-shirt he had on were all he had to wear.
Who'd they choose?
Not Raphael, Simon said, sounding as if he were pleased about that. Some other vampire. He had a pretentious name, Nightshade or something.
You know, they asked me if I wanted to draw the symbol of the new council, Clary said. It's an honor. I said I'd do it. It's going to have the rune of the council surrounded by the symbols of the four Downworlder families. A moon for the werewolves, and I was thinking a four-leaf clover for the fairies. A spellbook for the warlocks. But I can't think of anything for the vampires.
How about a fang? Simon suggested. Maybe dripping blood? He bared his teeth.
Thank you, Clary said. That's very helpful.
I'm glad they asked you, Simon said, more seriously. You deserve the honor. You deserve a medal, really, for what you did. The Alliance rune and everything?
Clary shrugged. I don't know. I mean, the battle barely went on for 10 minutes after all that. I don't know how much I helped.
I was in the battle, Clary, Simon said. It may have been about 10 minutes long, but it was the worst 10 minutes of my life. And I don't really want to talk about it, but I will say that even in that 10 minutes, there would have been a lot more death if it hadn't been for you. Besides, the battle was only part of it. If you hadn't done what you did, there would be no new council. We would be Shadowhunters and Downworlders hating each other, instead of Shadowhunters and Downworlders going to a party together.
Clary felt a lump rising in her throat and stared straight ahead, willing herself not to tear up. Thanks, Simon. She hesitated, so briefly that no one who wasn't Simon would have noticed it. But he did.
What's wrong? He asked her.
I'm just wondering what we do when we get back home, she said. I mean, I know Magnus took care of your mom, so she hasn't been freaking out that you're gone. But school? We've missed a ton of it, and I don't even know...
You're not going back, Simon said quietly. You think I don't know that? You're a shadow hunter now. You'll finish up your education at the Institute.
And what about you? You're a vampire. Are you just going to go back to high school?
Yeah, Simon said, surprising her. I am. I want a normal life, as much as I can have one. I want high school and college and all of that.
She squeezed his hand. Then you should have it. She smiled up at him. Of course, everyone's going to freak out when you show up at school.
Freak out? Why?
Because you're so much hotter now than when you left. She shrugged. It's true. Must be a vampire thing.
Simon looked baffled. I'm hotter now?
Sure you are. I mean, look at those two. They're both totally into you.
She pointed to a few feet in front of them, where Isabel and Maya had moved to walk side by side, their heads bent together. Simon looked up ahead at the girls. Clary could almost swear he was blushing. Are they? Sometimes they get together and whisper and stare at me. I have no idea what it's about.
Sure you don't, Clary grinned. Poor you. You have two cute girls vying for your love. Your life is so hard.
Fine. You tell me which one to choose, then.
No way. That's on you.
She lowered her voice again.
Look, you can date whoever you want, and I will totally support you. I'm all about support. Support is my middle name.
So that's why you never told me your middle name. I figured it was something embarrassing.
Clary ignored this. But just promise me something, okay? I know how girls get. I know how they hate their boyfriends having a best friend who's a girl. Just promise me you won't cut me out of your life totally, that we can still hang out sometimes.
Sometimes? Simon shook his head. Clary, you're crazy.
Her heart sank. You mean...
I mean that I would never date a girl who insisted that I cut you out of my life. It's non-negotiable. You want a piece of all this fabulousness? He gestured at himself. Well, my best friend comes along with it. I wouldn't cut you out of my life, Clary, any more than I would cut off my right hand and give it to someone as a Valentine's Day gift.
Gross, said Clary. Must you?
He grinned. I must.
Angel Square was almost unrecognizable.
The hall glowed white at the far end of the plaza, partly obscured by an elaborate forest of huge trees that had sprung up in the center of the square. They were clearly the product of magic. Although, Clary thought, remembering Magnus's ability to whisk furniture and cups of coffee across Manhattan at the blink of an eye, maybe they were real, if transplanted. The trees rose nearly to the height of the demon towers, their silvery trunks wrapped with ribbons, colored lights caught in the whispering green nets of their branches. The square smelled of white flowers, smoke, and leaves. All around its edges were placed tables and long benches, and groups of shadow hunters and downworlders crowded around them, laughing and drinking and talking. Yet despite the laughter, there was a somberness mixed with the air of celebration, a present sorrow side by side with joy. The stores that lined the square had their doors thrown open, light spilling out onto the pavement. Partygoers streamed by, carrying plates of food and long-stemmed glasses of wine and brightly colored liquids. Simon watched a Kelpie skip past, carrying a glass of blue fluid, and raised an eyebrow. "It's not like Magnus's party," Isabel reassured him. "Everything here ought to be safe to drink."
"Ought to be?" Aline looked worried.
Alec glanced toward the mini-forest, the colored lights reflecting in the blue irises of his eyes. Magnus stood in the shadow of a tree, talking to a girl in a white dress with a cloud of pale brown hair. She turned as Magnus looked toward them, and Clary locked eyes with her for a moment across the distance that separated them. There was something familiar about her, though Clary couldn't have said what it was. Magnus broke away and came toward them, and the girl he'd been talking to slipped into the shadows of the trees and was gone. He was dressed like a Victorian gentleman in a long black frock coat over a violet silk vest. A square pocket handkerchief embroidered with the initials MB protruded from his vest pocket.
"Nice vest," said Alec with a smile. "Would you like one exactly like it?" Magnus inquired. "In any color you prefer, of course."
"I don't really care about clothes," Alex protested.
"And I love that about you," Magnus announced. "Though I would also love if you owned perhaps one designer suit. What do you say? Dolce, Zegna, Armani?"
Alex sputtered as Isabel laughed, and Magnus took the opportunity to lean close to Clary and whisper in her ear.
"The Accords Hall steps. Go."
She wanted to ask him what he meant, but he'd already turned back to Alec and the others. Besides, she had a feeling she knew. She squeezed Simon's wrist as she went, and he turned to smile at her before returning to his conversation with Maya. She cut through the edge of the glamour forest to cross the square, weaving in and out of the shadows. The trees reached up to the foot of the hall stairs, which was probably why the steps were almost deserted. Though not entirely. Glancing toward the doors, Clary could make out a familiar dark outline seated in the shadow of a pillar. Her heart quickened. Jace. She had to gather her skirt up in her hands to climb the stairs, afraid she'd step on and tear the delicate material. She almost wished she had worn her normal clothes as she approached Jace, who was sitting with his back to a pillar, staring out over the square. He wore his most mundane clothes, jeans, a white shirt, and a dark jacket over them. And for almost the first time since she'd met him, she thought, he didn't seem to be carrying any weapons. She abruptly felt overdressed. She stopped a slight distance away from him, suddenly unsure what to say. As if sensing her there, Jace looked up. He was holding something balanced in his lap, she saw, a silvery box. He looked tired. There were shadows under his eyes, and his pale gold hair was untidy. His eyes widened. "Clary?" "Who else would it be?" He didn't smile.
"You don't look like you."
"It's the dress." She smoothed her hands down the material self-consciously. "I don't usually wear things this pretty."
"You always look beautiful," he said. And she remembered the first time he'd called her beautiful in the greenhouse at the Institute.
He hadn't said it like it was a compliment, but just as if it were an accepted fact, like the fact that she had red hair and liked to draw.
"But you look distant, like I couldn't touch you."
She came over then and sat down next to him on the wide top step. The stone was cold through the material of her dress. She held her hand out to him. It was shaking slightly, just enough to be visible.
"Touch me," she said, "if you want to."
He took her hand and laid it against his cheek for a moment. Then he set it back down in her lap. Clary shivered a little, remembering Aline's words back in Isabel's bedroom. Maybe he's not interested anymore, now that it's not forbidden. He had said she looked distant, but the expression in his eyes was as remote as a faraway galaxy. "What's in the box?" she asked. He was still clutching the silver rectangle tightly in one hand. It was an expensive-looking object, delicately carved with a pattern of birds.
"I went to Amatis's earlier today looking for you," he said, "but you weren't there. So I talked to Amatis. She gave me this." He indicated the box. "It belonged to my father."
For a moment, she just looked at him, uncomprehendingly. This was Valentine's, she thought, and then with a jolt. No, that's not what he means. "Of course," she said. "Amatis was married to Stephen Herondale."
"I've been going through it," he said, "reading the letters, the journal pages. I thought if I did that, I might feel some sort of connection to him. Something that would leap off the pages at me saying, 'Yes, this is your father.' But I don't feel anything. Just bits of paper. Anyone could have written these things."
"Jace," she said softly.
"And that's another thing," he said. "I don't have a name anymore, do I? I'm not Jonathan Christopher. That was someone else. But it's the name I'm used to."
"Who came up with Jace as a nickname? Did you come up with it yourself?"
Jace shook his head. "No. Valentine always called me Jonathan. And that's what they called me when I first got to the Institute. I was never supposed to think my name was Jonathan Christopher, you know. That was an accident. I got the name out of my father's journal. But it wasn't me he was talking about. It wasn't my progress he was recording. It was Seb... it was Jonathan's. So the first time I ever told Mayris that my middle name was Christopher, she told herself that she'd just remembered wrong, and Christopher had been Michael's son's middle name. It had been 10 years, after all. But that was when she started calling me Jace. It was like she wanted to give me a new name, something that belonged to her, to my life in New York. And I liked it. I'd never liked Jonathan."
He turned the box over in his hands.
"I wonder if maybe Mayris knew, or guessed, but just didn't want to know. She loved me, and she didn't want to believe it."
"Which is why she was so upset when she found out you were Valentine's son," said Clary. "Because she thought she ought to have known. She kind of did know. But we never do want to believe things like that about people we love. And Jace, she was right about you. She was right about who you really are. And you do have a name. Your name is Jace. Valentine didn't give that name to you. Mayris did. The only thing that makes a name important, and yours, is that it's given to you by someone who loves you."
"Jace what?" he said. "Jace Herondale?"
"Oh, please," she said. "You're Jace Lightwood. You know that."
He raised his eyes to hers. His lashes shadowed them thickly, darkening the gold. She thought he looked a little less remote, though perhaps she was imagining it.
"Maybe you're a different person than you thought you were," she went on, hoping against hope that he understood what she meant. "But no one becomes a totally different person overnight. Just finding out that Stephen was your biological father isn't going to automatically make you love him. And you don't have to. Valentine wasn't your real father, but not because you don't have his blood in your veins. He wasn't your real father because he didn't act like a father. He didn't take care of you. It's always been the Lightwoods who have taken care of you. They're your family. Just like Mom and Luke are mine."
She reached back to touch his shoulder, then drew her hand back.
"I'm sorry," she said. "Here I am lecturing you, and you probably came up here to be alone."
"You're right," he said.
Clary felt the breath go out of her. "All right, then. I'll go."
She stood up, forgetting to hold her dress up, and nearly stepped on the hem. "Clary!" Setting the box down, Jace scrambled to his feet.
"Clary, wait. That wasn't what I meant. I didn't mean I wanted to be alone. I meant you were right about Valentine, about the Lightwoods."
She turned and looked at him. He was standing half in and half out of the shadows, the bright-colored lights of the party below casting strange patterns across his skin. She thought of the first time she'd seen him. She'd thought he looked like a lion, beautiful and deadly. He looked different to her now,
That hard defensive casing he wore like armor was gone, and he wore his injuries instead.